Welcome to Cross Body of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
And we're back with more content while on social isolation. Another episode, another good episode, we're hoping, but a really great wrestler to cover. Who are we covering this week, Javier?
Today we are covering Dave the Animal Batista. This is a gentleman who I am obviously very fond with because he was, the second biggest star in my era of wrestling. So, you know, this is definitely one that I was looking forward to. When we get to John Cena in about 10 years, then you know, we'll be really hitting my sweet spot. But except Batista, I was really excited to do this episode because, you know, I got to see a lot of the matches that I watched as a kid. Some matches that I watched, you know, just in my return to wrestling and stuff like that. And then a match that I had not seen. I've seen snippets of it. I've seen the part that, like, you know, really matters from it. But I hadn't seen it in its entirety because I genuinely just don't remember that pay-per-view. But that's for down the line. So it was really cool to see that. You know, I got my little nostalgia. I got my return to nostalgia. And I got to see something I'd never seen before. And honestly, that's kind of what you want out of an episode like this, is to sort of inform yourself, but also remember things, which is really cool. That Batista's kind of that guy who, you know, he hit us at a time where we were both watching wrestling. At least I was. I was very invested in wrestling. And then he retired last year. So, you know, we really spanned the whole lifetime of his career. So it was really cool to have sort of a guy who's still fresh on our minds and freshly done and be able to just do his whole career, especially when it's as successful as he was.
And as successful as he is now, Batista is one of the, I'd say, the rare cross-promotion stars in terms of being able to be a wrestler as well as an actor. You know, I'm a big Marvel guy, a big fan of Dave Batista as Drax. I think he does a really good job. Big James Bond guy as well, so I really liked him. I think it was Spectre that he was. Yeah. And
subpar, you know, James Bond movie, but it's okay.
But I still think that Batista does a good job. And in general, you're right about, like, Batista is somebody that I'm really familiar with, but I think the matches we chose, the first two are ones I remember watching live, as in watching those WrestleManias. The second two, so matches 3 and 4, I had never seen before. I had missed. So they were part of my lapsed fandom. We talk about that a lot on the pod, how a lot of wrestling fans tend to be lapsed fans and come back into it. And then the last match we're watching is right when I came back to wrestling. And it was really great to see Batista again in a different light. And I had to kind of do some old research in terms of how he has evolved since I last saw him in Evolution. Hey, good pun. But it's really great to go through and watch all these matches because Batista is very different from any other wrestler. He has something about him. There is that it factor that you can't really put a finger on that Batista has, and you see it in his matches.
Yeah, he had, like, honestly, Batista's work was pretty much average at best. You know, he came into it. It was not, like, he was already an older prospect. He was just a muscle guy who eventually became what he became. But, like, you know, Batista as a promo wasn't, you know, he wasn't the best. You know, in the ring, he wasn't the best. You know, as a character, he was pretty stale for a lot of his run. But the thing about Batista is he just had the it factor. And like, that's just something you can't really, like, measure in someone is whether or not they have the it factor. He was over with the crowd, whether it was a babyface or a heel. He was over with the crowd even when he was a stale babyface. You know, he was not an electric promo, so it's not like he was, you know, being like the CM Punk type where he's going to mystify you with his words, and he's not exactly a ring technician, so he's not going to Bret Hart be your favorite because he can put on 5-star classics. But
there's something about the strength he has and the way he uses it that makes you be like, that guy's cool. Yeah. I want to be like that guy.
And the thing with him is, like, there aren't many wrestlers out there who have that thing. Like, Brock Lesnar's the prime example of this, where, like, agreed, you know, from out of nowhere, he'll just, like, just explode on you with, like, such speed and strength where you're just like, whoa. And Batista has that ability. You see it sometimes with the awful looking spear that he puts out. But the thing that I love most about him is that, like, sometimes just out of nowhere, he'll just explode with a clothesline. That was my favorite thing about Batista when I was a kid. It was that he would just do that, and it'd be like, whoa, where the heck did he come from? Like, where'd he pull that out from? But Batista's not even the most mobile of guys. Like, Brock is just a freak athlete. You could put him in an NFL combine, and I believe that Brock could run a 4.3. He could outlift everyone there. He could, like, do everything. Batista, like, I feel like he struggles just to walk, especially in, like, the 2007 to, like, 2010 range, where he was just this, like, beefy guy. He was
big.
He was big. And like, yeah, he was, like, too jacked to be mobile, but he was still doing those crazy explosive moves that, like, I know to me personally when I was a kid, I was like, this is one of my guys because of that. I love that.
That's exactly what it is he has that innate ability to just become one of your guys. My friends and I often talk about when it comes to wrestlers, like, there's, like, an unofficial list of guys who are my guys or our guys. You know, original La Parca, that's our guy right there.
Pete Dunne, that's my guy.
Pete Dunne, that's your guy right there. And Batista has that same ability of, like, you just see me, like, that's my dude. Like, let's watch my dude do this thing. Let's see him, you know, spine buster people and make it look like they're going to go all the way through the ring, right? Before we get into the matches, we should talk about what this podcast is, because maybe people are listening to us for the first time. If you're listening to us for the first time, this is Crossbody at Work. What we do is we take 5 matches from a wrestler's career and we review them, we watch them, we talk about things we like, we talk about things we don't like, we do a whole spiel in terms of where they started, where they've ended up, and trying to go through their whole career. So what do you know about the early career of Mr. Dave Batista?
Well, I know he's part of the big OVW group that came down through Ohio Valley in that, you know, very early 2000s range. It was him, it was Brock, Cena, Shelton Benjamin, Randy Orton. You know, that group of guys. I believe Charlie Haas was there as well, but apparently we don't talk about Charlie Haas.
Which is disappointing because he's wonderful.
Yeah, I know he's one of your guys.
He is one of my guys.
But, he was part of that group. And I believe he was actually, like, the most successful when it came down to OVW stuff. He was the champion there for a while. He was
He's a one-time OVW World Heavyweight Champion. He went by the name Leviathan.
Yeah, he was great Leviathan. Name. I thought his name was Prometheus for some reason. But
good movie.
Yeah. but but yeah, no, I know he was that. And then he, you know, comes up. He's with D-Von as the, I believe he's Deacon Batista. Yeah, he's Deacon Batista. He's just standing there with the little thing.
The collection box.
Yeah, the little collection box. They kind of get into his backstory as far as him sort of maybe being having inappropriate relations with a priest, but that is beside the point. We don't want to get down
quickly,
that
quickly shoved to the back burner.
Yeah, and as soon as that
goes next,
yeah, as soon as that was teased, was when it really sort of ended between them. And then Evolution, yes, the Evolution.
It's a mystery. One of the best things that could have possibly happened to Batista. You turned me on to the Ruthless Aggression documentary on the WWE Network, and the episode specifically about Evolution. If people don't know, Evolution is the 4-person stable of Triple H, Ric Flair, Randy Orton, and Batista. And originally it wasn't going to be Batista, was it? It was going to be...
No.
Mark Jindrak. Oh.
So originally it was going to be Batista, but Batista got hurt in that match with Randy Orton, and he tore his tricep, I believe it was. Orton broke his ankle, but Orton obviously came back earlier because a broken ankle is easier to come back from than a tricep. And Batista was getting a bit antsy to get back, so he started training before he was supposed to, and then he tore his tricep again. And so, you know, instead of waiting, they sort of tried testing out Jindrak because they knew he was really good friends with Orton and he was also a young up-and-coming talent. But as you saw in the documentary, it didn't really work out because Jindrak just couldn't get it together.
Wasn't the fit.
With his attitude and stuff. So they just sort of waited for Batista. Jindrak lost his spot back to Batista. And we were off and running.
And now Mark Jindrak isn't in Marvel movies. That's pretty much how that works out.
Yeah, he's not in Marvel movies. He's not in James Bond. He's not making millions of dollars in Hollywood. That's for sure.
What a bummer. Fun fact about Leviathan. He had an undefeated streak in 2001 in OVW. Can you guess who broke his undefeated streak? It was a main roster talent who was very popular at the time.
At the time?
Yeah, 2001.
Very popular. Was this a mid-card talent?
No, this was a like an upper mid-card main event guy.
Oh, was it like an Edge?
No, it was Kane.
Oh!
I believe it was in December 2001. There was a match between Kane and Leviathan. It was the main event of an OVW show. And Kane beat Leviathan. And there was also interference in that match from the Hardy Boys and Stone Cold. I would love to watch that match.
Can you just imagine being in OVW? You're just like, you know, this is in a, you're watching the show. You know, it's a developmental, it's like promotion. And you get Kane, you get the Hardy Boys, and you get the most popular wrestler literally ever.
Like,
what?
What a great time to be in Ohio Valley Wrestling. Evolution, a great stable. And both of the first two matches we're going to talk about with Batista involve Evolution in some capacity. Should we just get into the first match?
Yeah, go right ahead. This is definitely the match that I enjoyed the most.
Interesting. Let's get into it. So it's WrestleMania 20. It is Evolution versus the Rock and Sock Connection. It's a 3-on-2 handicap match. So Ric Flair, Batista, and Randy Orton versus The Rock and Mick Foley in Foley's first match in 4 years.
Was this his first match in 4 years? Because he had the feud Orton. The
feud with Orton actually comes after this.
Oh!
I believe this leads into... He had been taunting him up until this point, and this is what really leads into the feud coming out of it.
Oh, okay. I got my timeline off then. Because I know Orton... They showed a promo before this... not directly before this match, but earlier in the pay-per-view. It's the famous Evolution one where Orton is talking the whole time. And Batista and Ric Flair are standing one on each side of him, and they're all in suits, and they're just in a stairwell in Madison Square Garden. Just, they're moving in different spots of the stairwell, but they're just talking into the camera, and Orton's just running down Mick. At one point, he gets to the part where he kicked Mick Foley's head, and Mick fell down the stairs. But in the whole time, Ric Flair is just there with his Ric Flair, I'm probably drunk smile, and Batista's just there, like, with a face that he's just, like, does not want to be there at all, but he has to look tough and intimidating, and it's killing him.
Weird promos. Mid-2000s, weird promos. Right? Like, that's just a staple.
Yeah.
So, a little bit about this match. It's the third longest match on the WrestleMania 20 card. The only two matches that are longer are the two title matches. I didn't know that this was the match that had the most time behind it. I had no idea.
Yeah, this match seemed pretty quick to me. I don't even know what the runtime for this was.
It's, I believe, just a shade under 20.
Really?
Really?
This felt like a 10-minute match. It really did.
There's a lot going on in the match, which really helps it, because it does feel like it goes by a lot faster than you think.
Yeah, no, yeah, this...
It's the third longest match on the card.
Wow, this was cool. See, this WrestleMania, I really enjoy. You know, it's a nod back to old podcasts. You know, Trish Stratus was being fought over by Chris Jericho and Christian. And then we get the thing that I didn't want to happen, was she ends up with Christian. Who chooses Christian over Chris Jericho? I'm going to bring that back, because I need to understand this, because I still don't. I don't get it. She turns on Jericho, inadvertently hits him, costs him the match. And then after the match, she smacks him twice. Christian hits him with the unprettier, and then they make out at the top of the ramp. Who chooses Christian over Chris Jericho? Vince McMahon didn't even want this finish, but somehow we got it. I don't get it. But anyways, The Rock was on this pay-per-view. It doesn't matter. Evolution against Mick Foley and The Rock, The Rock and Sock Connection. It was an entertaining match. I really liked it. It was hot from the get-go. The Rock had his little moment there, a flair. He's just... The guy's been away from wrestling, and he's still The Rock. Like, I don't understand how you could just turn that switch back on and still be the most entertaining wrestler of all time.
Of course this match is entertaining. The Rock is inherently an entertaining person. His pre-match promo where he's pumping up Mick Foley backstage, and there is a shout-out to Don Morocco and Jimmy Snuka, who, you know, we don't talk about anymore. But there's also a random shot of Hurricane and Rosie, and he makes fun of him, calling him the Hamburglar. All great stuff. Ripping into Lillian Garcia, saying, "Don't look at the people's package." Great stuff. Like, The Rock was on fire. And so, of course, this is going to be entertaining, because The Rock is entertaining, Mick Foley is lovable, and the Evolution guys are all really good, even though, you know, Orton and Batista at this point are still relatively green.
Yeah.
Batista's not a spring chicken in this match either. He's 34 years old already in this match.
Yeah, I told you. He was like an older prospect. I mean, he really reached his peak when he was in his mid to late 30s, which is kind of crazy. I mean, I know that's like the sweet spot kind of for wrestlers. There's a lot of wrestlers now who are at the top of the card who you would be surprised are in their mid to late 30s. You know, Daniel Bryan is obviously one of them. Daniel Bryan was, I believe, like 32 at WrestleMania 30 or something like that, somewhere along those lines, you know? Jon Moxley's probably creeping up on his mid-30s.
Like, Finn Balor's age always blows me away because he's got more abs than I'll ever see in my life.
And he's like 38 or 37, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, good. No, it's really, like, that's kind of like the peak for guys. That's when you really hit your most popular, which is weird to me. But it's whatever. Batista was definitely a late bloomer as far as age goes. And then compared to Orton, who's probably all of 23, 24 probably in this match.
Yeah, Orton's still really young in this match.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see here because, you know, it's always those subtle things when it comes to the Evolution here that, you know, it was really obvious that they were focusing more on Orton in the long term than Batista. You know, Orton's really the head of this program. He's the one that started it with Mick and then got the Evolution guys involved here. And even in the match itself, he's sort of like the most important cog in it all because Mick and Rock are both trying to go after Randy to sort of get their comeuppance on him. But he's just being that like smarky little heel who doesn't want to get into the ring, doesn't want to get involved at all. But whenever, you know, they turn their backs, he's the first one there to really get his licks in.
And with that, Batista then kind of operates as the heater, right? He's the heavy. He's the one who is just there to do a lot of the power moves. It doesn't take a lot of damage. He does by the end, but for a lot of his early parts in the match, he's just kind of there to do power moves to really wear Mick down a lot. But you're right, the main storyline element here seems to be Orton, Foley, and everything else is kind of just revolving around it.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense. I mean, later on this year, just SummerSlam is when the title gets put on Orton. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense why they're trying to sort of elevate him here, if that was the goal that they were trying to reach. But it's just really interesting, because I thought Batista was pretty fun in this match. I genuinely, looking back
He's
on this...
He's great.
I think Batista... Ric Flair is my favorite element of this match. You know, but like, I thought that Batista was fun in this. I mean, he had those moments, like I mentioned earlier, where he's like in the corner and then he'll just explode and hit that clothesline, whether it was on The Rock. He did it on Foley as well. But the one on The Rock was the one that really stood out to me, because Rock sold it like $1 million. He sold it like he was just decapitated by the guy. You know, he hit a spine buster on Rock that The Rock just, like, he was dead afterwards.
It stops Rock's hot tag. Rock gets a hot tag and he's just cleaning house, and then one huge Batista spinebuster and that's it. And I thought that was really great at showcasing, like, Batista is legitimately a brick wall.
Yeah.
Like, he will stop anything, does not matter if you are The Rock.
And I feel like we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we didn't mention the whole thing between The Rock and Ric Flair in this match. Early on
in the match. Go into it. It's so fun. You tell it.
Early on in the match, The Rock and Ric Flair are in the ring together, and Rock hits Flair With a punch, and just like sort of walks away, and he's doing little Ric Flair strut. And later on in the match, Flair tries to do, I think it's after Batista hits that spine buster where the Rock is dead. He stops Batista. He's like pleading with him. And then he starts doing the people's elbow. And he obviously Ric Flairs it up. He does his little strut. He jumps over Rock, does the strut again. And when he's coming off the second time on the ropes, the Rock pops up. He hits him. And then he does the little strut, the little Ric Flair strut, but he does it so, with such exaggerated effort. It's perfect. And I mean, obviously, you know, does his stuff. He I believe, hits Batista with a Rock Bottom. He does a lot of things here. The Rock really gets his licks in this portion of the match. But as everything gets chaotic, I believe it winds down. Rock gets fully into it. And then that's really when things start getting crazy as far as the finish goes. So, Evan, I'm going to let you get to this part.
Every single wrestling fan has done a Ric Flair strut.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think anyone has done an impersonation of Ric Flair strut as good as Rock does when he's finishing off his own people's elbow. But now into the finish. The finish is, there's a lot of, not necessarily spamming of finishers like you would see in like a, you know, a PWG match nowadays, or like the end of a New Japan epic. But there's a lot of guys hitting their stuff right near the end. Batista hits The Rock with a Batista bomb. But the finish is one of the, not necessarily the first, but probably one of the most prominent first RKOs out of nowhere. Orton is really unaccounted for a little bit. He hits Foley with an RKO, and that's it. That's the match. And Orton manages to get the one up on the Legend. This is, you know, really great early Orton as Legend Killer. And it was the feud with Foley that really makes him. And I think having him win and having Evolution win this match was a really smart call in terms of their trajectory for what they wanted with this stable. Like, Foley and Rock can afford a loss. They are Mick and The Rock. They can take a loss. That's no problem. But
so,
they really needed this win.
It's important to note that wasn't supposed to be the finish.
Really?
That was the confusing bit, because I know that you, as you noticed, Foley pops up and he's like, two. Like, he no-sells the RKO.
Yeah, I thought he was
Foley was supposed
really
to
well.
Kick out of that, but he didn't. So, Foley and Rock were actually supposed to win this match.
Wow.
Yeah. The more you know. Listen, we're
the
breaking
little,
news
the
here.
The star just went across the sky.
Yeah, so
the
Foley and
I
Rock
know.
Were supposed to win the match. I don't know what the finish was supposed to be. I actually don't know if that's the truth. I've heard multiple reports on who, or I've read multiple reports and accounts on who was actually supposed to win the match, but the majority of the ones that I know are that Foley and Rock were supposed to win the match, which would set up the program between, you know, Mick and Orton for the rest of the summer, I guess. Now that actually makes a lot of sense why that happened then. But Mick missed, obviously. He kept his shoulder down, 3 count, and Evolution wins, which I thought was actually the better finish. Because I feel like Evolution should have won this match, and I feel like it should have been Orton pinning Mick to do that, to then, you know, reignite that thing, because, you know, it sort of puts a fire under Mick's thing, under Mick's being that, you know, he couldn't beat him even with The Rock. Like, it's The Rock. So he's got to do it himself, and he needs to do it, and that should have led to the hardcore match and all that jazz that inevitably comes with being there in that position.
Like I said, it makes a lot more sense for Evolution to win. Right?
Yeah, it does. These,
especially the two young guys who are on the rise. And like I said, Mick and Rock can take a loss. They're still not going to, you know, people aren't going to be like, oh, they suck now. They're Mick Foley and The Rock.
They're established.
They're beloved. They're made men, right? Yeah. They don't need anything else.
They could lose every match for the rest of their lives, and it wouldn't matter. People would love them every time they come out.
Exactly. You think I'm not going to pop when I hear "If You Smell"? Of course I will. But I think it was, even if it was an on-the-fly, you know, or a mistake decision, I think it was still the right outcome.
Yeah, and obviously it worked as a finish, because you didn't even know that it wasn't supposed to happen.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so yeah, there you go. But that transitions perfectly to the next stage of Batista. 1 year later, Batista is in the main event of WrestleMania, the best WrestleMania of all time. I said it, WrestleMania 21. The main event, Triple H against Batista for the World Heavyweight Championship. Evan, tell the people how we got here.
We got here because in one of the most fun Royal Rumbles of all time, 2005, Batista was the winner. There was originally the on the fly and, you know, another messed up finish where both John Cena and Batista hit the ground at the same time. Referees did a great job of selling it and arguing for their own brand to have won. A great job.
So a funny story about that. I just heard, I just randomly, I was going through my little YouTube thing inside the, or inside the ropes, I believe is the YouTube account. He was doing an interview with Edge, and Edge told a funny story about that. Cause most people don't know Edge was the third to last guy,
you know? And with that, he gets thrown over the top rope. And he's telling the story, like he's walking up the ramp. And he turns around and he sees the finish, but they hit at the exact same time. And he says it clean as day. They hit at the exact same time.
Like he says, couldn't have hoped for a better hit.
Yeah, you couldn't have hoped. Like it was the exact same time. And he sees Vince coming out and he says flat out, Vince is not an athletic man. He goes, Vince is strong, he can weight lift, but like you would never pick Vince in a basketball game. You know, he's not a mobile guy.
Let's play some none of that. Damn it.
he's not any of that. But like, you know, he says that Vince does the thing, he's just getting out of the way. Edge just moves completely out of the way, he's avoiding Vince at all costs. I think he said he went through a different exit to get to the back. He's just there, and Vince, you know, obviously does the thing where he gets into the ring, he stands up and just collapses. He does the whole spiel from his feet, because he tore both of his quads, getting into the ring.
He tears one getting in, and then he tears the second one trying to stand up once he's in the ring. So boom, boom, both quads. The chairman of the WWE.
Yeah.
So from there, the match restarted and Batista wins because he was supposed to be the winner.
Yes.
And then now Batista has a choice to make. He's still a part of Evolution at this point, and he has to decide whether he's going to challenge Triple H, his fellow Evolution member at WrestleMania, or if he's going to move over to SmackDown to make it a triple threat, I believe, JBL and John Cena for the WWE Championship. And Triple H and Ric Flair.
No, so at this point, actually, it's not JBL and John Cena. It's still, it would have just been Batista, JBL.
Okay.
Because Cena gets the match, because I believe it's No Way Out. He goes against Angle, Kurt Angle. I think it's a one-on-one.
Right, Cena has to earn the match.
And then he earns the
match.
That
makes
sense. To get in.
That makes sense.
Yes, that is how that worked out.
It would have been Batista JBL. Evolution has been making fun of Batista behind his back. They have been calling him dumb. They have been saying that they can manipulate him, this being Triple H and Flair. And Batista heard him because, of course, he heard them. That's how wrestling works. And so when it came to the contract signing, Batista initially picked up the SmackDown contract and gave a big thumbs up to Triple H, and that quickly turned to a big thumbs down. And Batista then wrecked everything. He Batista bombed Triple H. I believe he took out Flair too. And he signed the Raw contract, and so we had our main event for WrestleMania with a newly liberated, newly babyfaced Batista.
The most over guy in the company.
Triple H and Ric Flair. He was so incredibly over because I think people were so incredibly sick of Triple H.
Yeah. It's also important to note, Batista didn't get to this position without a little bit of luck. You know, towards the end of the previous year, it was really just set up to be Randy Orton and Triple H. I believe the way it was supposed to work out was the way it worked out. Where Orton and Triple H would have the original feud, and then Orton would turn around, win the Royal Rumble and then go on to WrestleMania to challenge and, you know, beat Triple H. That's the way it was set up. You know, it makes a lot of sense in the storyline. You know, Orton won the title at SummerSlam, gets turned on by Evolution, you know, loses the belt back there. But the thing with Orton was he never, and it's still like that to this day, he never really worked as a babyface.
He does not work as a babyface.
He just doesn't work as a babyface. The people weren't with him at all. Which really allowed Batista to sort of slide into that position, you know, because he was the one that people really started focusing on when Orton didn't work out. He got there because of that. And, you know, obviously he took the ball and he ran with it. And you see what happens. He becomes the guy. He's main eventing WrestleMania. He's the one that beats Triple H. And he's the one that's really given the ball to run with, him and John Cena there.
It's wild to think that Batista just a year ago was really the heavy in a stable tag team match. It was still a high profile match, but not necessarily, you know, that level. That amount of growth in a year from a performer is unheard of, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially someone so young. You don't really see that.
And like young, you know, in terms of wrestling career. He wasn't a spring chicken. We talked about that before. But, you know, still so early on in the career.
Yeah. It's like, at least, you know, the thing with John Cena, like, at WrestleMania 20, he's the opening match beating the Big Show for the United States Championship. So it's conceivable that by the next WrestleMania, he could be in the position to beat JBL for the WWE Championship. You know, Batista's the fifth most important guy in a handicap tag match with two of the biggest stars that the business has ever seen. Like, he's the throwaway young guy in his own group. You know, he's not really focused on it at all. So for him to go from that to main event of WrestleMania against the most hated guy that the WWE's really had in the last 10 years at that point is kind of mind-blowing, and it's also a testament to his ability to have that it factor, to really draw the crowd in with him. And even though he's not a spring chicken as far as his in-ring work goes, and he's not the greatest person on promos, but his thing always that I liked about Batista, especially in this phase, was the facial reactions. The way he's able to mix in his looks, where he's able to go from happy to sad, you know, he did the thumbs up, thumbs down thing, and that really became a part of his gimmick for the rest of his run before coming back there in 2014.
It's weird to think of what things will get over and what will catch on.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that Stone Cold Steve Austin could get what over? Like, who would have thought that? You know, it's obviously become
a nuisance. And bad promos have hated him for it since then.
Yeah, it's obviously been a thing that has turned negative with the wrestling audience, but who would have thought that would be a thing that got over? You know, it's really interesting to see what gets over and what doesn't. And it just is, again, it's a testament to Batista as far as talent goes, where he just had the it factor. He was going to get there no matter what, because the crowd just got behind him. He was put in a good position and he took the ball and he ran with it. A
couple things about this WrestleMania match. It's a WrestleMania main event, so of course Triple H has a funky little fun entrance, because that's what he gets. And this time it's Motorhead, and they were great. I thought it was an excellent entrance. Batista's entrance, he does not have the iconic yeah scream at the beginning as of this point, and I was so let down. Yes, watching Battle of the Brands between Xavier Woods and Tyler Breeze on YouTube has given me a new affinity for Batista's entrance music, but still there's a little bit of like waiting for that yeah, because when it happens it's like it's Batista time, like you're just ready, you're just excited. And so when it didn't happen, it was kind of like, oh wait, huh? And I got very sad. I said it was tragic, just tragic. But you know, the start of the match, pretty even. I think there's a certain story they were telling. They laid it out pretty clearly on commentary that it was going to be Triple H's smarts and his kind of in-ring savvy versus Batista's pure power.
Yeah. It's also like, here, I'll show you guys what this match is really like. Think literally any Triple H WrestleMania match. This is the match. I mean, it's the match you get the next year in the main event against John Cena. It's the match you got against Roman at 32. It's the match you got against Orton at in 2009. I forget what Mania that is. You know, it's a Triple H main event. You know, it's going to go 20-plus minutes. It's going to be him getting beat down for a bit of it. Then it's going to be him on top for a lot of it. There's going to be some interference. Obviously, in this match, we have Ric Flair on the outside.
Who's great.
Yeah,
Rick does such a great job.
Rick is amazing. I love old man Ric Flair for the simple fact that, you know, he doesn't need to wrestle. He's just awesome on his own, just being Ric Flair, because Ric Flair in and of itself is the perfect character to have, because you can't, like, mess it up. There's nothing you can do as Ric Flair to be bad. It doesn't matter whether he's wrestling, he still has the mic chops. It doesn't matter whether he doesn't have it on mics, he's still in it with his antics. Like, Ric Flair is just awesome.
I will bring up the whole kissing Becky Lynch against her will thing from the Royal Rumble a couple years ago as, like, that's a rate of Russ to not like Ric. But, like, this iteration of Ric Flair, mwah, chef's kiss, so good.
Yes, I mean, Ric Flair, even nowadays, I mean, he'll come out with his little mannerisms. I'm not going to say the thing with Becky was acceptable, but, you know, he's out there, he's doing his little strut. You're doing it now, I'm doing it now.
Just keep
little
slapping shoulder himself. Pats. I don't get it.
Woo! Yeah. You know, it's beautiful. You just love Ric Flair. You have to love him. He's great in this match, and he's important in this match because, you know, he's the guy who was tag team champions with Batista when they held all the gold. You know, he's the guy who's really with Batista in that. Batista will credit Ric Flair with a lot of his progression in the business, and that's to be expected because Ric Flair is one of the greatest in-ring workers of all time. He's one of the greatest promos of all time. He's one of the greatest characters of all time. You know, to be able to be one of the best of all time in all facets of wrestling is kind of incredible. Ric Flair is an absolute icon. And it was all very important for him to be in this match because it's very clear that he had an influence on Batista and his whole wrestling being.
What are some of the moments in this match that stood out to you?
My favorite moment of this match is when Triple H is, like, bleeding. And then he gets busted open because, of course, he does. And then he is on his knees. And he's sort of just, like, slumped up. He's doing the Triple H thing. You know what it is if you're listening to this.
You can all picture it in your mind.
You can all picture it in your mind, whether he's standing or he's on his knees or whatever. He's doing the thing where he, like, hunches his back a bit, but he's, like, leaning backwards and he's just, like, sucking in his gut. And he's just looking like he's just out of it completely. And Batista just comes up behind him and he just starts reeling with punches. I love that. There was also a spine buster that he hits. It doesn't lead to the finish. It's just somewhere in the middle of the match that he just picks up Triple H and he just drops him. He just, like, drops it. He does not. It's not your regular, you know, spine buster that you see, like, Triple H hit where it just looks clean. It's not even a regular spine buster that you see Batista hit where it looks clean. He just picks him up, drop, done. That's it. I just love Batista in this match because it's very clear that he wanted to work a bit stiff. Because Triple H probably wanted it that way. And it's really clear to see that Triple H sort of had the in-ring control over the match as far as, like, planning it out and all that. You definitely could see his influence in this. But, like, Batista played his part greatly. I mean, he did everything that he needed to do to get the crowd on his side. And when he does inevitably get the win, you know, everyone chants. You know, it's all about Batista here. And the match was really all about Batista, you know, because no matter what Triple H did, no matter what little underhanded tactic, no matter what thing he did, you know, it was always about Batista, you know, being just too much for him.
He was and just see he that was as, too dominant of a force. Batista was going to be able to take him out no matter what underhanded tricks, you know, Ric Flair on the outside or Triple H would do. At one point, there's a ref bump. Flair interferes and gets spinebustered to death. And then Triple H hits Batista with the title shot. And people, I think, immediately thought, well, like, this is how Trips is going to win. Because that was very in line with how Evolution would win, how Triple H had retained
his title. How he beat Goldberg.
Yeah, exactly. How he retained his title before. But the kick out, when Batista kicks out, gets a really big pop. Like, the fans are really invested at that point. The finish, reversal of the pedigree by Batista, something we don't see often.
Okay. Yeah, it's very important to describe this. Because it's not your typical pedigree kick out.
Yeah.
So Triple H is going for the pedigree. Reversal. He's going for it. And he's like, he has him hooked up. So typically what happens is he just gets flipped over there, like, right away. But he, like, attempts it. And when he does his little jump, he can't go. He just, like, stops. And he's like, you don't know what happens that first time. Because it's like, why didn't he just do the thing? But then his face gets all like, what? So he tries it again, doesn't go. And that's when you realize Batista's blocking him from doing so. But it doesn't make sense that he's blocking him from doing so. Until really he does it the third time. And you see Batista's arms kind of like clenching a bit. And then you see him like sort of stiffen up a bit. And that's when you really realize, oh, this guy's just way too strong. Like, he can't lift him up because he's not going to come off the ground.
It's the ultimate display of what they've been trying to tell the whole match, which is like Triple H is trying to do this technical move that he does all the time, and Batista is legitimately just too strong for him to do this move to him. And then right after that pedigree reversal, it's a Batista bomb, and boom, it's over. Match is over. I think Triple H often gets a lot of heat for not putting the right people over, right? You think about Booker T. You think about that Goldberg match we already referenced. Randy Orton. Here, Triple H did the right thing. He put the right man won. The right man went over. I think it might be easier because from what I can tell in all accounts, Triple H and Batista are friends. They clearly rode together in Evolution. I think it might be easier for him to put over a guy like Batista. Plus, the fans were making it so you really couldn't not put over Batista. You had to do it. So it was the right call and a really good end to, as you have said, the best WrestleMania of all time.
A great WrestleMania. Like, just everyone who's going to say it's WrestleMania 17 or whatever, or 31 or whatever people think is the best WrestleMania ever. Just, like, look back at that card. There are no real stinkers on that one. It's just such a good card. You know, it made new stars. It had some freaking hilarious backstage stuff that went down. The legends are everywhere. You know, it's just really cool. It's really entertaining to watch. I love this, man. This is my first real WrestleMania that I saw. It's the first one that I was super invested in. So obviously, it holds more of a sentimental thing with me. Because I was really invested in Batista and John Cena. You know, I was really invested in that Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels match. There was a lot of stuff there that was really hit home with me. I love this whole pay-per-view. I will always think it's the best WrestleMania of all time because there's just so much in there that's so good. Like, really, go back and watch this thing because it's amazing.
My favorite WrestleMania is 19.
Lesnar,
Angle, Rock, Stone Cold,
Triple H, Booker T.
Yeah, which is the only real wrong decision, I think, on the whole
card.
Michael's Jericho, and my boys, Team Angle, versus Benoit and Rhino and Los Guerreros on the main card. My boys made the main card. You love to see
it. Survivor Series 2007.
Yes, that's where we're going next. Survivor Series 2007. It is Batista versus The Undertaker in Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, I like the way they built up this match because you really see it in the promo package. Just sort of how important this match really was. These two guys met at WrestleMania this year, did they not?
2007 WrestleMania would be what, 23? I believe so. That's worth a Google.
Yeah, so I believe these guys met at WrestleMania, which was when Batista, so in the promo.
Yes, this is the one where they met at WrestleMania.
Yeah, so it's very important to highlight in that the video package is very much sent around the fact that Batista couldn't beat The Undertaker. He lost at WrestleMania, but then he does beat him. He beats him at Cyber Sunday. It's the first win Batista ever had on The Undertaker. And you would think, oh, he got his win. Over and done with the program. Nope, The Undertaker comes back. They're knotted up at 1-1. Batista's cutting a promo. He's like, you know, we're even in my book. The Undertaker comes out. He's like, Batista, one more. And Batista goes, you want a match? You want a title match? You got it. And he goes to leave. Undertaker, in his little dead man draw, goes, wait. Hell in a Cell. And then it's just like, oh, okay, so they're having a Hell in a Cell match. Batista doesn't even get a response in the video package. Very weird. The match is just set up because The Undertaker apparently has creative control over all of this.
Undertaker has the ability to just summon Hell in a Cell. He can just be like, I want this Hell in a Cell now. And boom, we have Hell in a Cell match. He did this.
To be fair, if you think about the logistics of it, it's like, what's Vince McMahon going to say? No to the Undertaker?
No, of course not.
It's like, so yeah, no, this definitely goes in. They have their Hell in a Cell match set up. Also, Undertaker, you don't need a 5-minute entrance every single time. You just don't. Like, it's Survivor Series. Like, you're in Hell in a Cell. That's cool. Can you at least make it like 3? Maybe 4.
I liked Undertaker's entrance when he was doing the contract signing with AJ Styles. He just ran out to the ring.
Yeah, that's a great one. A
couple
one.
Weeks ago.
Like, you know, the Undertaker entrance should really just be WrestleMania. It's like, yeah, you can walk a little bit faster, Mark. You know, what are we doing?
Marcus, walk faster. Before we get into this match, I want to do a quick one-off hit. What is your personal favorite Hell in a Cell match?
The first one, the first one is The Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, which is the one where Kane debuts.
Yep.
I thought it was a really fun match.
It's a really good match.
Up until the Kane debut, and then Kane debuts, and obviously that's a big moment. That's what leads to the finish. But yeah, no, it was a really well-worked match. There was a good story behind it with The Undertaker and DX, specifically Shawn Michaels, obviously. And that obviously leads to the Royal Rumble match that they had against each other where, you know, Sean breaks his back on the casket and all that stuff. But I thought that Hell in a Cell match was great. What's yours?
One of my personal favorites, just because of who's involved, is the New Day Usos tag Hell in a Cell. I thought they did a really good job. But my favorite one to just like throw on and watch ever is the Armageddon 6-man Hell in a Cell. It's just chaos. It's so fun. Where it's like, the Taker, Rock, Angle, Rikishi, who falls off, who gets tossed off the top of the cell into a back of a truck that's
full of hay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is pure anarchy the entire time. A couple years ago, I went back and rewatched all of the SmackDowns and pay-per-views from the year 2000, and they are a hoot. 2000 is probably the best overall year for pay-per-views in WWE. But I would
say 2000's overall the best year for WWE ever.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, you're probably
right.
Full stop. All right, into the match. The first thing I have written down has nothing to do with the match, because of course it doesn't. How does Batista always manage to get that little goatee to be perfectly in the center of his face? He does a really good job. That's an underrated skill. As someone who has facial hair and tries to make it balanced, sometimes it just doesn't look balanced. The fact that it's always in the middle, underrated skill of Mr. Dave.
You know, I thought I was going to have the facial hair thing, but it's not for this match. It's for the next one.
Okay.
But, like, yeah, I'm thinking back on it now. He does have it perfectly centered in his face. And it's, like, the perfect shape and size, too. It's really interesting.
He's either got a good barber, or he's a very talented man. And even if he has a good barber, he's a smart enough man to know he should go to a barber.
Apparently,
easy peasy.
I want the record to show that Evan, not smart enough to go to a barber.
Correct. I am not. That is true. Especially now. All right, let's hop in to the actual match. What were your kind of favorite parts from the beginning, or some of your most memorable moments in this match?
Yeah, the beginning starts off a bit slow, which you would kind of expect between these guys. I mean, you know, Undertaker's a big dude, Batista's a big dude, so it makes sense for them to sort of go back and forth as far as the power stuff goes in the beginning of the match. But when, you know, weapons start getting involved here with steel chairs and all that jazz, is when it really starts picking up and when it starts getting hot. I mean, you know, obviously later on in the match, there's the steel steps that get introduced and all that jazz. But I think when the elements of Hell in a Cell really starts playing the role, when you know, they're outside and the Undertaker's rubbing and banging Batista's face on the steel cage, and all that really starts happening, is when this match really starts to pick up. Because otherwise, you know, the Cyber Sunday match, I remember that match, honestly, from memory. It was one of those random matches that I saw. You know, it's really slow, it's really methodical, and then it starts picking up. But you don't really see how they can sort of go above and beyond in just a straight singles match. So I think that's really why Hell in a Cell was important to this, because in order for these guys to really show out, they kind of needed it. I mean, they had the singles match at Mania, they had the singles match at Cyber Sunday. There's only so much you can do. So when
the logical progression is to some sort of gimmick, right?
Yeah, and let's just give them the most extreme one of them all with the big steel cage.
I think you're right, though. Once the weapons get involved, this match really picks up. The one spot that really stood out to me with the weapons was Taker driving Batista's throat into the chair on the outside, and it actually makes Batista bleed from the mouth. And just, ouch, it was fast, and it looked like it... I obviously don't know how to take bumps, right? But I don't know how you take that without it actually hurting you. Like, it's a steel chair to the throat. Like, it has to have sucked.
Yeah, that looked like it sucked.
Also, there's a really good spot early on. Undertaker's going for old school in the ring, and Batista just pulls him down for a spinebuster. Great. I love that level of, like, you know, it's this far into the feud. I know your moves, you know mine, so I'm going to be able to counter. And it makes sense for Batista's counters to not necessarily look technical, but just like, hey, you're kind of in a spinebuster position right now. And boom, down you go.
Yeah.
It just makes sense.
I mean, I feel like the ultimate example of that, you know, in the WWE context, because we know the ultimate example of that is Tanahashi Okada over in New Japan. But the real perfect example of that was the AJ Styles-John Cena feud from a couple of years ago, where, you know, by the third match, they were just like reversing everything that they had, which was really cool and is really what made that their matches really special, especially that Royal Rumble match that they had, where Cena matched Flair for the title, you know, times winning the title. They did that a lot. It was really cool here because this match was really between two baby faces, but the real underlying secret that WWE had during the 2006 to like 2008 run with The Undertaker, he was a heel masquerading as a babyface. I mean, the guy was, you put him in there with Edge, and obviously, you know, he's the babyface by default because Edge is the biggest heel in wrestling at this point. But like, when he's going up against a Batista, or he's going up against a Shawn Michaels, or like a Rey Mysterio, like, he's the heel 100%. I mean,
he has to be. Yeah.
Batista's throat straight into a steel chair. Like, that's some diabolical stuff right there. Like, that's some stuff that heels do. You know, his actions, you know, he loses at Cyber Sunday and the first thing he does, I want a rematch. Yeah. Like, you know, it's a lot of Undertaker really being a heel, but it doesn't matter because he's the Undertaker, so he's a babyface.
A heelish thing that Batista does at one point is he's in the corner with Undertaker and he just bites the top of his head, and Taker just kind of responds by hitting him with the last ride because, you know, he was in position. Why not? One big kick out, I would say, in this, and that's Taker flipping Batista onto steel steps, tombstone, kick out at like 2.8, really.
Yeah.
A good kick out. But then we get into the finish. You want to go into the finish already?
Yeah, the finish. There's a cameraman outside who does not look like a proper cameraman. Oh wait, it's Edge. Edge and Undertaker obviously had their massive feud during the summer, pretty much for like a whole year. And you know, it leads obviously eventually to the WrestleMania match in 2008. I believe it was the main event, right? Yeah, it was the main event of WrestleMania, Undertaker and Edge. And you know, this is really sort of what kicks it back off, because Undertaker and Edge had sort of gone their separate ways. I believe SummerSlam was when that
feud Edge sort had been hurt, and so this is his return to wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
He'd been out injured for a couple of months.
Okay, yeah. I believe it was SummerSlam, though, the last time that the feud really, air quotes, ended. But yeah, no, they did their thing. Edge is a cameraman. He hits Undertaker with a camera, which, I mean, that just has to suck to take, no matter what. Like, because you still have to, even if you're, like, you know, working the thing, you still have to, there's supposed to be contact.
You still have to get hit with a camera.
Yeah, and I don't see how any sort of contact, even the slightest bit, doesn't suck.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, Edge does that. Undertaker's really out of it. And this is where it gets weird, because there's like a solid two and a half minutes before the next part happens. And the Undertaker is sort of like getting up to his feet, and he's like working the thing. Edge puts him on the steel steps, grabs a chair, and like Edge like forces his head down on the steel steps, but he doesn't hit his head on the steel steps. He just sort of like places it there, and the Undertaker just, he's dead. Like, he just doesn't move whatsoever, even though he was already stirring before this happened. And then Edge hits him. It's like a concerto, but not really. It's with the steel steps, so it's even more vicious. And that's kind of the end of it. Oh wait, no, because the steel cage comes up after Batista wins the match. Oh, so spoiler, Batista wins the match.
Yeah, Edge pulls Batista onto the Undertaker, and he wins, and the ref doesn't want to count it, but he does. And then Edge also eventually is the person who takes the title from Batista. It's a very weird thing, but
it's a very weird dynamic. But Hell in a Cell, like, the cage is risen. You think, oh no, it's kind of over. Nope, Edge is back. He starts beating on the Undertaker again. Again, Edge was fantastic.
Oh, my boy, Edge.
From like 2006 to like when he tears his Achilles in 2009. Like, he was just on fire as a character, as a heel, all that jazz. This feud with the Undertaker was really like the feud for like an entire year and a half. I mean, it was hot. They had so many matches with each other, but it didn't matter, because every single time it was good, because these guys were on, like, Undertaker from 2006 to like 2013 was just peak in ring work. It was every single match, almost, aside from the Great Khali stuff and the feud in 2010 with Kane. It was all good in ring stuff. You know, and, you know, it was just really fun. And his feud with Edge was really good. And it kind of sucks that it kind of overshadowed the feud with Batista here, because the feud with Batista,
but the match was brutal and good. Yeah.
Yeah. And the feud itself was great. It was basically just a competitive thing. Batista was the top guy on SmackDown, and The Undertaker wanted to be the top guy. And that was it. That was the story.
It's a simple story, and it's a good story when you tell it right. And I think they were doing a good job here. With that, we will move on to the fourth match, but we will get to that match after a quick commercial break. So, hopping back into it, we're at Bragging Rights 2009. Now, this is the wild card pick. This is the match that, when I looked up, you know, what are some underrated Batista matches, this one came up a lot. It is a fatal four-way for the World Heavyweight Championship, and it is the champion Undertaker versus Batista, versus Rey Mysterio, versus CM Punk. Now, quickly, and without any reasoning given, rank these four guys in terms of your top, like, your favorite guy to your least favorite guy. Go.
All right, everyone's going to hate me for this. So my favorite guy in this group is Batista, because I'm a big Batista guy. My second favorite is The Undertaker, because...
Okay.
I mean, that just has to be understandable. My third favorite is CM Punk, especially this CM Punk right here, which we'll get to in a bit. And then it's Rey Mysterio. And I'm sorry, Rey, I love you, but like you're just the fourth in this situation.
That is fair. Mine goes probably Punk, Undertaker, Batista, Mysterio. Mysterio and Batista are like almost a tie for third. Where they're both valuable, but I just have more affinity to Undertaker and Punk. But anyways, into the actual match. I know you have never seen this match before. Yeah. I had never seen this match before. What were your thoughts coming in with a fresh set of eyes to this Fatal 4-Way?
I thought it was fun.
It's a really fun match.
Yeah, just a little recap before the match here for everyone. Like, basically, the story of this is... So, CM Punk was the Money in the Bank holder. And Jeff Hardy had won the championship. And he basically... Was this the Jeff Hardy one? Yes, this was the Jeff Hardy one. Jeff Hardy, I believe, beats out Edge. When he gets Edge stuck in the ladder when they're having their crazy match. And then he wins the belt. And then immediately CM Punk cashes in.
Yep.
Ultimate heel move. Good job. Because I believe that's when he turns heel. And then this kicks off the really fun CM Punk heel run right before the Straight Edge stuff where he's just... a chicken S-word heel, and you know he's just awesome in this role because it's CM Punk. He's a great talker, he's a great wrestler, and now he has a real character because up to this point he's just sort of CM Punk. He doesn't actually have a character, but this is when he gets a really defined role and defined character, and I really enjoy this whole run he has. And then eventually that leads to he beats off Jeff Hardy. That feud is over. And then he sort of starts his feud with The Undertaker, where The Undertaker obviously beats him because
he's The Undertaker.
He doesn't think that CM Punk is a top guy because CM Punk doesn't wear a suit. That's the actual story there. He took the belt from CM Punk because he doesn't think he's a top guy because he doesn't wear a suit.
And then Mysterio and Batista get added because these two are BFFs at the time.
Yeah, and they're kind of like a pseudo tag team, but not really.
They're just
kind of
looking out for one another. And they're both, you know, trying out to see if they can become world champion. And they're early on, they kind of do work together in this match. A couple early spots I really liked. One is Batista taunting too long and gets booted by The Undertaker. Love that. Another is Batista actually saves Mysterio from getting hit with the last ride.
Yeah.
Because it's showing how good of a team they were and the fact that they would actually look out for one another.
Yeah.
But the first thing that I written down about this whole match was like, there's a good pace to this. A lot of multi-man matches can sometimes get lost in like setting up spots or just two guys actually wrestling in the ring, other guys just being around. Early on in this match especially, there's a good pace and a lot of actual wrestling happening at the same time.
Yeah, that's my favorite things about having these multi-man matches where if it works, it really works. What you would have is like two guys be the focal in the middle while everyone's just sprawled out outside. But there's a lot of stages in this match where it's two guys going at it and then the other two guys are going at it. It's obviously hard to capture that as far as the camera stuff goes, but they did a pretty good job of doing so. Obviously, we get back to the traditional formula where it's just usually two guys or maybe a third guy sort of added into the mix for a short bit. But, like, yeah, no, it works a lot in this match. And I think what really helps is that all these guys are over.
Yeah.
You know, CM Punk is over. Very over. I mean, I think he got the loudest reaction when they were doing the announcements. Admittedly, a lot of it was boos because he is the most hated man in WWE because he retired Jeff Hardy. But, like, yeah, a lot of this stuff is still reactions. I mean, Rey got the least amount of reactions, and he still got a pretty good pop.
Yeah.
Batista got a loud pop in this.
Which is strange, because I think this was near on the tail end where Batista as a babyface was getting a little old.
It was very stale at this point.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, there's a lot of good little elements in this match. My favorite part of this match actually comes a little bit after when he saves, I believe it's just after he saves Mysterio from the last ride, is when he sets up The Undertaker with a spine buster. He goes for the pin. Mysterio breaks it up. And then that's when Batista sort of just face shoves him down and out of the ring.
I love it because Mysterio not only breaks up the pin, he tries to steal the pin. And he tries to pin The Undertaker. And then Batista breaks that up and is like, what are you doing? And they have a little, like, little argument.
I'm trying to be champion.
Little friendly argument. And then you're right. Batista just palms Mysterio's head and tosses him out of the ring. Later on in the match, Batista catches Mysterio midair and launches him onto Punk on the outside, which, like, you don't normally do that to your friends. So that's a pretty telling sign, I'd say.
Yeah, a fun spot earlier on in this match is actually, so when I think Mysterio is going for a pin, and then Punk breaks it up, and then he grabs Mysterio and he, like, slides him out of the ring, and Mysterio does that really fun spot that I love that he does when he slides underneath the bottom rope.
Splash.
Yeah, and then he just, like, lands outside face first. It's amazing. I love that spot. It sucks to take, probably, but he, like, he's not a heavy guy, so it's probably not as bad for him to do. But, like, it's just so fun. I love that that spot.
Later in the match, pretty much right after Batista launches Mysterio, it's actually a tombstone from Undertaker to Batista, and Undertaker retains, ending the match, but more importantly, getting us to the most important part of this match, which is what happens immediately after.
Yeah.
Josh Matthews. The most important part of this match is Josh Matthews. No, it's not. He comes into the ring to interview Mysterio and Batista about how they feel after the match, which is already suspicious because this never happens. And Mysterio talks about how they were close, but they just couldn't get it done. And, aw, shucks, I'll try again next time. Wasn't, weren't we close there, Dave? And Batista snaps. And he snaps so well. Batista says, we weren't close. I was close. It's the heel turn match. This is why everybody on the internet was suggesting it to us.
Yeah, so when we were watching, when I was watching the match, I was like, and I saw the face push thing, I was like, oh, this leads to the heel turn eventually. I thought it was in like a week or a couple weeks after this match.
Or a month. Yeah. Like later on.
Yeah, I did not think it was directly after the match.
It was so fun. You have some issues with the promo delivery, so I'm going to let you get into that, because I thought it was fun, even if it wasn't the most well-acted thing I've ever seen.
So my real problem isn't really as much with the Batista side, because there's not much for him to really do. I mean, it makes a lot of sense for him to deliver it the way he does. The guy's going crazy. He's out of breath. I mean, he's the one that lost the match.
Yeah, he got tombstoned.
You know, it's the Rey Mysterio side of it that really hurts me. Also, like, Josh Matthews just made me completely sour to it. Josh Matthews, if for some reason you're listening to this podcast, just know, me, Javier, I hate you. You suck. Like, but, like, yeah, no, like, he's... I am an actual journalist. I do the sports writing thing. Like, I am a sports reporter. That interview sucked. Like, those were bad questions. The delivery was bad. You don't fish like that. Like, even the real model for this would be Joe Rogan in the UFC, and Joe Rogan was infinitely better than he is. And Joe Rogan's a freaking comedian, man. Like,
and he is better at this than Josh Matthews, for sure.
Yeah, who's actually, like, trained in this, and is actually, like, an announcer now. Like, come on, dude.
So
be better.
One of the weirdest parts about it, in terms of the delivery, has nothing to do with Josh Matthews. Batista says so matter-of-factly, I'm going to rip your head off.
And Ray is just standing there.
Ray still doesn't evacuate the premises. If anyone...
He doesn't move at all.
Even your best friend says, I'm going to rip your head off, in that tone, that calmly, you're going to die, son. So, like, get out of...
He's like four times your size.
Get out of there. Batista grabbing Mysterio by the face and screaming, you're supposed to be my friend, that's good. Inject that directly into my veins. That's some good stuff right there. He absolutely ragdolls Mysterio around. He would actually beat Mysterio at Survivor Series by referee stoppage.
Yeah, it's bad. I love this heel run by Batista, by the way, because this sort of leads to the Hollywood Batista later on in his feud with John Cena, and that's the one that's the money character that guy had. The fact that his run...
Should we get into those promos?
We'll get to it in a sec. I need to mention the facial hair thing.
Oh, yeah.
Rey Mysterio! What is that? Like, I know Rey Mysterio has his little patch on his chin, the little goatee thing, yes. But it's like knotted up, and it kind of just looks like a lollipop that you'd get from the dentist. I don't understand what he's doing there. It's disgusting. He needs to go to the Batista barber, because that's what I need to understand. The Batista barber. I hate that we didn't get that gimmick.
Batista, yeah, that's what we needed, was another Brutus the Barber beefcake. Let's crack into the promos. So we're going to lump the two promos together, really, because there are two promos that really show this good Hollywood Batista. The first one is a promo kind of battle with John Cena ahead of WrestleMania 26.
Yes.
And the latter is the heel turn Batista on his return ahead of WrestleMania 30, where he gets confronted by Dolph Ziggler.
Of all people.
Because WrestleMania 30 is when he came back as a face, and it was horribly received by everybody. And eventually he became good old Batista, and his kind of framework for that was this Hollywood heel character that he had against John Cena. Do you know why, and have you heard about Batista wearing sunglasses during his promos?
I don't, actually. What do you know the reason?
So, I've read this a couple times online. Apparently, Batista, despite being somebody who's like a pretty social guy and is a good, you know, good person for remembering lines, still would get nervous at the size of the crowd when it came to saying things. So, he would wear sunglasses because it was easier for him to not see as many people or to not see the crowd. And he could focus on what he was saying and who he was talking to. So, a lot of his heel character promos, it became a lot easier for him because it was, you know, douchier to wear sunglasses inside.
Yeah.
So he would just wear the sunglasses and cut the promos. Yeah. But I've read that a couple times, and in both of these promos, he's wearing sunglasses.
Yeah. This is really a good Batista here, because he's sort of telling it how it is. You know, he says, especially in the I'm sorry. So this is the John Cena one that I'm talking about here. Yeah, he tells it how it is. You know, he's the WWE champion. He wanted this match against John Cena because, as he says, they are the two biggest stars since the Attitude Era ended. And for some reason, the brass decided that John Cena was going to be the man, not Batista. And he wants to show John Cena, he wants to show the brass at WWE that he should have been the man. He is the man, and he is going to prove that by destroying John Cena at WrestleMania. And that alone is the perfect incentive. I mean, he's the heel. Everyone knows he's the heel, but he's got a reason to want this match with Cena. And it sort of, it elevates Cena because it sort of puts him on that the man pedestal, but it also elevates Batista because he's like, you're right. He is one of the two biggest stars since the Attitude Era. That, like, he's there, and now I'm curious to see what's going to happen at WrestleMania, because he's going up against the other guy.
And I love when heels have an objectively good reason to be upset, and you can understand their thought process. Tying it back to Marvel movies, it's why Killmonger in Black Panther is such a good, you know, bad guy, because you're like, I get what he's saying. Or I understand why he's doing it.
Vulture in the Spider-Man Homecoming.
Vulture in Homecoming.
Those are my two favorite villains when it comes to the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. Same thing with Thanos, you could say.
Yep.
You know, they have a great grasp at making villains, because it's, you give a bad guy a reason, a good legitimate reason that the crowd or that the people watching could just be like,
I can see where you're coming from. Yeah. And that's where, that's where Batista is.
But don't
do
it that way.
Yeah. And that's where Batista is here. The one line I really loved in this promo is, say something inspiring, John. We want to hear it, because, you know, John Cena loves his catchphrases. And I was like, ooh, that just stings. Like, it just, it's such a good little jab at Cena. This was Batista's last feud before leaving the company.
Yeah, later after WrestleMania, and I believe it's the first match that they had, right? The first pay-per-view after WrestleMania. I don't remember what it was. It was a last man standing match. And then Batista just gets flung off and into the electrical stuff with the AA. That's it.
Yep.
Never see him again.
Until he comes back ahead of the Royal Rumble, before WrestleMania 30. Comes back as a face, like we said, and that goes over like a lead balloon. And then this is official heel turn promo, where he's talking about where have all the real men gone, which is just really an extension of this Hollywood character, right? Like, look at me, I'm a star. He at one point strips off his shirt and asks if your heroes are as good as me. And like, that just made me giggle. I love that. That's good stuff.
Yeah. And I thought it's really interesting because at this point, the WrestleMania main event is him and Randy Orton.
Yep.
Randy Orton, not exactly a small guy.
And not exactly a baby
Randy Orton
face
is
either.
Actually taller than Batista. He's also, I'm not going to say he's just as strong as Batista, but if Batista's 100%, Orton's probably like 93, 94% of what Batista is. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you don't really have an argument there, buddy.
And of course, Dolph Ziggler interrupts, because this was when Dolph Ziggler was still a hot thing. He says Jack a lot in this promo.
Yeah.
He's like, I got news for you, Jack. You're a dinosaur. And it's like, oh, that's not very good.
So, the thing with Dolph Ziggler is, especially with his promos, is he's very hit or miss. Because, like, it's very clear that Dolph Ziggler is a good talker. But the issue with Dolph Ziggler is that sometimes he just doesn't really know what he's saying. And that's bad. Because, like, yeah, he's good with the delivery. You know, he's got some passion when he's got the fire underneath him. But, like, sometimes he'll just hit a promo where it's just a big dud. And I feel like that happens more often than not. Like, you can tell he's got a good promo there. He's obviously gifted on the mic. But he just says things that's just like he thinks they're going to hit, but they never do. And obviously this Jack thing, like the dinosaur line, was supposed to be like a ooh from the crowd. But it doesn't work. It just doesn't hit.
The only good thing that Ziggler hits in this promo is a dropkick. And it's a good dropkick.
Yes.
It's a good dropkick, yeah.
It's a great dropkick. One of the best dropkicks ever.
This promo leads into the last match, which is an excellent match. And it's an excellent match that really isn't about Batista. It's about Batista as part of a group that's holding down one man, and that man is Daniel Bryan. WrestleMania 30 main event, Randy Orton versus Batista versus Daniel Bryan. I almost don't want to lead with what are your thoughts on the match, because it's just, we know it's a good match.
Yeah, it's an excellent match. It's not the best match Daniel Bryan had that WrestleMania.
Okay.
I thought the opening match against Triple H is the best match on the whole card. I thought it was fantastic.
I think this gets a certain level of emotion out of me at the end that makes me forget how good the Triple H match was.
Although, I will say that in rewatching this, which is weird because I saw this match, this is the second time I saw it in like a week because they replayed WrestleMania 30 on ESPN, and I saw that. So I managed to catch this and the match before this, which I forget. It was the women's match, I think it was. Doesn't matter. But like, yeah, this is it was interesting to see because, like, you know what happens, but they still get you, you know? And I think that was the beauty of Daniel Bryan at this time, was the fact that he was so over and you were so emotionally invested in this guy that, like, anything other than Daniel Bryan winning the match was unacceptable. So when they like, even, like, I know the finish, I know everything, but there were still some, like, close calls there, some count, you know, two counts that, like, really got me, because I was like, holy crap, Batista's going to win this match, or holy crap, Randy Orton's going to win this match.
I remember watching it and thinking, you know, WWE, if they know what's really the smart thing to do, they'll let Brian go over. But also, WWE would love to rip our hearts out. They do it all the time. So what if they have Triple H win and they have an Evolution triple threat? And I remember that was a legitimate fear for a lot of people going into the night. Was it like, Daniel Bryan's not even going to make it to the main event. Like, he's gonna lose Triple H. I think once Bryan got into the main event, a lot of people were like, it's happening. Like, they're all in on him. But you're right, there are still lots of points in this match that get me, that, you know, sucker me in.
Yeah.
In terms of Batista's part of the match, what I wrote down was that he takes a lot of beating early in the match, but also him and Orton are pretty much a unit at the beginning of the match, too.
Yeah, so the thing that actually really was interesting to me is I expected a lot more of Batista and Orton, like, going at each other. I didn't realize that it's not until kind of beyond the midway point of the match that Daniel Bryan gets taken out.
Yeah.
I always remember it being earlier in the match. Like, for some reason, like, within the first, like, 5-7 minutes of the match that Daniel Bryan gets put through the table and carted off. It's actually, like, within the last 5 minutes of the match that happens.
Yeah, it's all very quick. So, at one point, Bryan looks like he's going to win. And then, my notes verbatim, Triple H looking like Daddy Revival with his windbreaker and towel come out with the rest of the Authority. And Mike Chioda gets...
How dare you disrespect Imperium like that? That is Imperium's outfit.
Chioda gets pulled out of the match, and crooked referee Scott Armstrong replaces him, which I forgot about the crooked referee part. Totally had slipped my mind.
At least it wasn't a Hebner.
This is true. At least it wasn't a Hebner. Bryan kicks out of a Batista bomb, and then Bryan kicks Armstrong in the head while he's on the ground. Great. Good quality stuff. Always like kicking referees. But then that's when it's really the Orton and Batista team up, is after this initial interference from the Authority.
Yeah, and I did not remember Triple H's involvement in the main event at all. I genuinely, like, that was just completely out of my memory bank. Even though I'd seen the match like 3-4 times probably well before this viewing. Like, so I didn't watch this match. Like, I wasn't watching wrestling when this match took place. This was during my lapse phase. So, like, I had to obviously go back and watch it because, you know, I got really invested in Daniel Bryan when he came back, you know, after his original neck injury, you know, in that 2015 range. So I went back and watched this because obviously, you know, this is a really important moment in wrestling history, you know, this guy winning the main event of WrestleMania 30. It was cool to see that all happening. I got really invested in it, even though I knew the results. Every single time I watch this match, I still get invested in it. And even though I know the result, there's always the one false finish that gets me. And it's when Batista, I believe, hits a Batista bomb on Randy Orton towards the end of the match, and Orton kicks out, and I'm like, oh, thank God. He kicks out with, like, it was 2.9 when he kicked out, and I was like, oh, my God.
One thing I'm a big fan of in this match is that instead of the stretcher job taking Bryan out and then back into the arena, is that he doesn't even get past the entrance ramp. Like, he pulls it off immediately. He's like, I'm still in this match. And he starts crawling back in. Because I think it takes something out if he were to, like, physically leave the space. I think that really takes people out of it when you stretcher drop that way. We've seen it with Roman Reigns before, where it's like, he's literally resting. But Daniel Bryan never leaves your sight. And you see him selling the whole time. I think that does a lot more good for the match by keeping him in and keeping him around. But then, like we've said, it's really like boom, boom, boom right after that. That happens really late in the match, and it really sets off the ending, which is a really good ending. God, what a good ending.
Yeah, I think what's really important about that stretcher part also is when you see, since people aren't used to, when you see Daniel Bryan like shaking and sort of ripping his way out of the cart, that's when the crowd really gets on their feet.
Yeah.
You know? That's when they really start coming alive. You hear the loud reaction. And this is a crowd that got all of its energy sucked out with The Undertaker losing earlier. And the fact that Daniel Bryan was able to get them back on their feet and back and alive for this is incredible. You know, it's a testament to not only how over he was at this point, but just how invested people were in his story and in this storyline as a whole, because that was the moment that really tipped you off to like, okay, this guy's actually going to win this match now, probably. You know, that's what you still don't, you're not fully behind it because you know it's WWE. You know, they really wanted this evolution storyline to really come to fruition, which I will say, literally any other year
could have worked.
Like, yeah, that would have been really cool to be a main event. You know, you have your Batista, Randy Orton, Triple H thing. Like, that would have been really freaking cool, especially in 2009. Like, that's a missed opportunity. You already had Triple H and Randy Orton in the main event. Why not just throw Batista in there?
Yeah.
You know? But that's beside the point. Yeah, no, this was really, really gets cool. And I'll let you really describe the finish.
Batista here. Bomb by Batista on Orton, and Orton rolls out of the ring smartly. Out of nowhere, based on the camera angle, Brian hits the running knee and a yes lock, and then Michael Cole gives what is, in my opinion, the best call of his career, when he's just essentially yelling for Batista to tap out. And he's saying,
Batista's gonna tap out. Is he gonna do it?
When he finally does, and he calls him the Miracle Kid, Miracle on Bourbon Street.
The Miracle Kid! It's a miracle on Bourbon Street!
I, growing up, despised Michael Cole. I thought he was a terrible announcer. This was all influenced by my older brother. This is the best Michael Cole call of all time.
Oh, undoubtedly.
It is genuine emotion. It is a great call in terms of what's actually being said. It adds to the moment without making it about Michael Cole. And God, the feeling of seeing Brian win. I could watch this match over and over again, and I'll always get a little goose pimples.
Yeah, when he goes over to his family, like his sister and his niece, and he's just there with the belts, like that just goosebumps every time. Like, that's one of those things where, like, you can't really exit out. You know, the celebration lasts all of, like, somewhere between 5 and 7 minutes, something like that. And you just can't exit out until the very end of it, because, like, you're just so attached at this point, you know? It's, like, I watched the whole thing both times, and I'd seen the match twice within a week, you know? It's like, Brie comes out, and they have that special moment. It sends goosebumps up and down my spine, man. It's just really good. Good on Daniel Bryan. You know, he deserved that moment. He really did. You know, I really hope that, you know, we can get more of those special moments. You know, I really hate that these kind of things sort of happen every 10 years, like every 10 WrestleManias. Like, it happened at 20 with the He Who Shall Not Be Named and Eddie. You know, it happened at 10 with Bret Hart. You know, it every 10 WrestleManias, it seems to happen. So I'm really interested to see what's going to happen at WrestleMania 40 in a couple of years here. Let's fingers crossed that it's Pete Dunne finally getting his big title in the main event of WrestleMania.
I can't wait for WrestleMania 40 when in the main event it is the crowning of Humberto Carrillo.
No, it's going to be Pete Dunne. We're not going to do this. I won't speak anything else into existence. It will be Pete Dunne. Pete Dunne will be the champion at WrestleMania 40. The people are going to be behind him, and that is that.
Batista in this main event, a really good job overall in terms of what his role was. It's almost like a parallel to the first match we looked at WrestleMania 20. He wasn't there to be the star.
Yeah.
In this instance, he was there to make the star. He was there to make sure that Daniel Bryan was cemented by, you know, taking all of the things that he had earned, all that credit he had earned over the last decade, and bringing it into this match as, like, a credible, badass heel for Bryan to overcome. And I think he does a great job in terms of, you know, still fighting Randy Orton, but, you know, being one of the two big bad guys for Bryan to overcome. I think he does an excellent job.
Yeah, he does do an excellent job. I thought he played the best role in the match. I thought, as far as the, like, quality in ring work stuff goes, I thought Batista was the best in this match. I think he was the best one of the three. You know, he does things here, like, you know, that the stuff with Orton on the outside when him and Orton are going at it. You know, I thought that was really well done. I thought the stuff with Brian when he had his little solo one-on-ones with Brian were great. When he's teaming up with Orton against Brian and they're just pounding him, like, I thought he just had, like, these little moments that were so influential to the match and just helped develop the story even more. And it's really obvious that Batista just gets it at this point. You know, as far as the little character things, the little in-ring things that help progress a story, he was the perfect addition to this general story arc with Daniel Bryan, because I feel like if it was just Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton, it wouldn't have been as good. It wouldn't have been as satisfying. But the fact that Batista was thrown onto there.
No, you're right.
And, you know, he's the one that stole that Royal Rumble moment from Daniel Bryan, because Daniel Bryan wasn't in that Royal Rumble. He didn't get that chance, you know? And they already told the story of Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton. They already did that. That was
over and over, yeah.
They had all those matches, and Orton would continuously win no matter what would happen. But, like, to have this, it's like the two guys who kept stealing my opportunity, I still got it, and I won. Like, that, it's the checkmate of all checkmates. And, like, good on Daniel Bryan for having this. Good on Batista for playing the part that he did, because he did not need to do that. But, like, he did it, and he did it selflessly, and it was awesome.
And he tapped out clean.
Yes, he put over Daniel Bryan in the biggest way possible.
With that, we're going to reach the end. Javier, your overall thoughts looking at the career of Batista?
Okay, just one of the best of all time. Like, I don't think you can really have that debate. Like, he's not on my Mount Rushmore. He's not in my top 10, probably, but Batista is undoubtedly one of the 10 to 20. He's in that 10 to 20 range for me, at least. I think he's fantastic. I think he's so underrated as far as his character stuff, as far as, like, the little details and matches that really sort of solidify the whole story. Like, I don't think there are many guys out there who are better storytellers in the ring and outside of it than Batista. Like, he just got it, and it's not at all surprising that he was able to transition to Hollywood so well, because that's really a trait that you need, you know? The Rock was very good at it. They're just, like, Cena is very good at that as well, and it's just, there are some people who can transcend the wrestling aspect of wrestling, and those are the guys that are always very successful, and Batista is just one of those.
Batista is one of the best examples of the WWE capitalizing on it factor, on realizing that they have something special with a particular wrestler and making something happen. And I think also one of the best jobs of WWE, knowing when somebody should be a face and knowing when somebody should be a heel. They knew when to turn him, they knew when to turn him back. They were able to kind of ride that wave with him. And I think he was able to play into whatever role they gave him and play it really well. And it's led to, you know, a legendary Hall of Fame career for Batista. Plus, the dude just looks badass. He kicks ass.
Yeah, he looks amazing. And I'm just really happy that he sort of got his due diligence and he was able to go out the way he wanted to. I mean, the match against Triple H was what it was. I thought it was interesting. That's the type of match that they really went for instead of a straight up just one-on-one, like they did all those years beforehand. But that's the match that Batista wanted, and that's the match that we got. And honestly, I'm good on WWE for giving the guy what he wanted in the end, because he deserved it. He gave him so many years of just great storytelling, great work. You know, he made so much money for that company. WrestleMania 21 was one of the is still one of the highest selling WrestleManias of all time, and he was the big piece of that. You know, like, that's, he is the main event. He was the story of that pay-per-view, and it's just really cool that he was able to transition into another big money role with Marvel. He was obviously in James Bond. You know, he's got a button Hollywood career that's really starting to explode. And honestly, there isn't a better and more deserving person than Dave Bautista, because he is just so good and so unselfish in his, you know, abilities, that like the guy was a main event player and he gave back to the business just as much as the business gave to him.
With that, we'll wrap up this week's episode talking about Bautista. Javier, where can the people find you on social media?
The people can find me on Twitter at jmellosports. That is J-M-E-L-O sports. I do a lot of the sports writing gigs. I'm going to have to keep saying this for the rest of time. So don't be surprised when you see a lot of my sports tweets. Be wary of that. But I do love wrestling. I do love talking about wrestling. So if you ever just want to chit chat about that, or shoot me a couple of messages about wrestling, please, if any other fanboys of Pete Dunne are out there, I am more than ears and willing to talk about the greatest professional wrestler of all time. But anyways, yeah, that's where I am.
I am back on Twitter, having created a whole new Twitter account. So you can follow me on Twitter at It's Evan Gomes, ItsEvanGomes. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Crossbody of Work. Tweet at us with suggestions. We're also going to be sending some tweets out soon in terms of what bonus content you'd all like to see. So get at us on Twitter so we can know what kind of things you'd like for us to provide to you during this time without sports, without anything else to watch on TV. Hopefully you listen to things we have to say and watch some of the things that we suggest you watch. You can also email the podcast at crossbodyofworkpod@gmail.com if you have suggestions for people we should cover or matches we should watch. With that, that about wraps it up for this week. Say goodbye to the people, Javier.
Goodbye, people. I love you. I'm going to miss you. And thank you for tuning in.
Bye, guys.